It is certainly with a sense of hesitancy that a graduate of Southeastern returns to this lectern to give any type of address or to lead in a chapel service. I confess to you that inwardly I've had serious misgivings as to what my task would be or what my opportunity actually is. But in a line with a covenant that I have made with five other missionary families, I want to share with you this morning something of a new mission field and something of what our experience has been during one term of service on a mission field. I've often referred to the experience that I think our children had in going to East Pakistan as that which best typifies what we experienced inwardly. When we left here, the States, in 1956, we had a four-year-old and a little girl not quite 2 years of age. We'd been doing that which I think any couple would have done under our circumstances, something that most of you are doing even now as parents. We were very much aware that our children would be in the public eye, that wherever we went, what they did would reflect upon us. You know, I don't know why it is we can excuse everyone else's child but our own. And so for weeks and months, we had been carefully, you know, putting a little more emphasis upon table manners and upon how you act in public and things that you do that makes for a little better appearance, and it certainly helps the ego of the parents. We headed out across halfway around the world to go to the country that was to be our place of service. Can you imagine a four-year-old, one almost 2 years of age, after they had been told again and again, now use your fork, use your spoon, it's there for a purpose. After they'd been told, sit up straight at the table, sit in your chair. Can you imagine them making a trip and getting to a country and sitting down with a group of Christians for the first time at a welcome feast that they gave for us? We didn't sit at tables. We sat on the floor. To sit there on the floor and then to have, in a few moments, some of the men come out with their pant legs rolled up and they carefully placed in front of each of us a section of a banana leaf that was still dripping with water with which it had been washed. Then in a few moments to have them come by with a huge pan of rice and to ladle out the rice in front of each person, then to follow it with the curry and place the curry beside the rice. No fork, no spoon. And then someone else to come by and give a pinch of salt, and then to have a four-year-old look up at you as if to say, well, what do I do? Where's my fork? Where's my spoon? And in those moments, you try to say, it's all right, go ahead and eat with your hand. I say that which they were experiencing has best been our experience. To be inwardly thinking that you knew what was right or what you should do, and then suddenly to be thrust into a situation where what you thought was right turned out to be wrong, and what was wrong that you had thought previously turned out to be right. Oh, I know I'm making reference to social customs. That's one of the things that we have the greatest difficulty with, learning when you go to another country, coming to appreciate that which they do, for actually it certainly makes entertaining much easier. Not to have to do the dishes, not to have all the questions of which fork you would use now and what you would do. But that question mark that must have come in their mind, the question mark that must have come in their mind when we had emphasized to them that when we got to Pakistan, the place that was to be our home, they would not be allowed to take off their shoes. That where they must always wear their shoes, that they could not go barefoot. And then that day, one of the national pastors took us over to the Baptist church. We walked up upon the veranda of the church and we started to go inside and he stopped us. He said, you must remove your shoes before you go in. To look inside, to see a floor that had not been disinfected, it had not had the cleanliness maybe that you would insist upon, yet it had been swept, rugs were laid out for worship. And then to try to tell a little girl, then 2 years of age, come on, honey, let's take off your shoes. Take them off. We've got to take them off. That inner question mark that always comes of starting to lose confidence in in your own being, in a sense, in what you're doing, trying to understand them. But that was not the greater thing that we had to learn. For when we went to East Pakistan, though we were the first Southern Baptist missionaries, we were in no way going to a new mission field. We were going to a mission field where Baptist missionaries had been preaching for over a century. The house into which we first moved had had missionaries living in it since 1886. The compound onto which we walked, the work which we turned to study and came to know, was a work that had a great tradition behind it. And even in the context of the Christian church, we started to seek new definitions, to learn. For the only word that I could use to define our experience of a little over 3.5 years in Pakistan is a learning experience. Oh, soon we learned enough of the language or knew enough of it to ask questions. And always you were asking, what is this, or how do I say this? But soon we learned how to ask, are you a Christian? We'd walk back through that Christian compound and we'd see the little group of children playing, and you know it's always easier to try your language on children. And so you'd turn around and say, well, tu mi ki Christian? Are you a Christian? A little 3-year-old would say, huh, I'm a Christian. Or you could turn and ask a 5-year-old, 6-year-old, all of them would say, huh, yes, I'm a Christian. You can turn and ask the senior man on the compound, are you a Christian? He'd say, yes. And that presented to us the biggest question that we've dealt with all the time we've been there. What is a Christian? What is a Christian as these people see it? This is a Baptist community. A 3-year-old says he's a Christian. A 5-year-old says he's a Christian. The man 50, 60 years of age says he's a Christian. What do they mean when they say Christian? And I began to look back upon our experience of entering that country, of the innumerable papers that one has to fill out in taking out residence, that question that comes on every form, caste or religion. And I know the pride that I took the first time I filled it out, Christian. I was identifying myself with my calling, with my Lord. But I came more and more to see that I had to know what they meant by that word. For to the government, I came to know that when I said that I was a Christian, I was first of all saying that I did not belong to 85% of the population, which is Muslim. In a country, a territory about the size of North Carolina, with over 13 times the population of North Carolina, I was saying that I did not belong to the large segment of that population. I was saying in second place that I did not belong to another portion of that population known as the Hindu community. I was saying that I belong to a community that identified itself as the worshipers, the followers of Jesus Christ. But then I turned to ask, well, what did it mean within the Christian community? It did not mean that I had had an experience of salvation. It did not mean that I knew Jesus Christ as my Lord. For most of those Christians whom we came to know were not converts from Hinduism or Islam. No, the Christians we came to know were third and fourth generation Christians, the descendants of converts. And in the main, they were descendants of Hindu converts, people who had been converted from the lower caste of Hinduism. And so as we came to live with them more and more, we understood that when they said they were a Christian, they were simply saying, yes, my father or my grandfather is a Christian. They were saying, I belong to a community that's called Christian. I am not Muslim. I am not Hindu. I am not Buddhist. I belong to a community of less than 0.5% of the population, a small minority group, a group that's turned in upon itself, a group that has no outreach. As we came to live and study their meaning of the word Christian, we found a community that was closed. Well, it was understandable. I remember when one of our missionaries went down to the marketplace, struck up conversation with one of the merchants and invited him to come to the Bible class the next Sunday afternoon at the Baptist church. The merchant queried quite a bit, asking, "Well, you mean I can actually come? I'm welcome? You want me to come?" The missionary insisted, "Yes, we want you to come. You're welcome." The next Sunday afternoon, that Muslim merchant did not come alone. He brought a large group with him. When they walked inside that compound gate and made their way over to a Baptist church, the whole congregation was electrified. For you see, the church was not a place for Muslims. It was for Christians. Oh, inwardly, the indignation started to come up within us. We talked about it from the point of, can this be a Christian church that doesn't welcome people? How can they ever win a Muslim? How can they ever win a Hindu when their church is closed? We came to understand why it was like that. To know the background of Pakistan, a new country, then 10 years of age, to understand just 10 years before that over religion, men had been struck down and killed. Muslims had turned against Hindus. Hindus had turned against Muslims. And in the midst of it, you had a small percentage of the population called Christian. Men who had once gone to the marketplace to preach were afraid to go preach. And a community was at the place of seeking, what is our place? What do we do? And so they were closed. But you know, as we came to know more and more and better understand and sympathize with them, and turn still to read the New Testament and try to present to them what it was to be a Christian, it was heightened even more, the question in our mind, when we moved to the capital city of East Pakistan and took up residence in a district of over 5 million people and started a mission work among Muslim people. Only 3 blocks from Dhaka University with 18,000 students, and we the only Christian mission that was trying to have any witness among them. To watch Sunday night after Sunday night as those students gathered inside that hall, to turn then to the Bible, to turn, if you please, and go back through the notes of men who sit in this audience, of going through all that you'd ever studied, of looking young university students in the face and asking, first of all, in your mind, what is it they think a Christian is? And then turning to try to answer, what really is a follower of Jesus Christ? To know, as you talk to those Muslim young men, first of all, when they see the Christian, they think of a minority community. When they look at the Christian, they think of those who have the carryovers from the low caste of Hinduism. They think of a community which they identify still with the Hindu community, because the people in the Christian community still have the mannerisms of dress, of eating, of their greeting, everything else that the Hindus have. And so in the Muslim's mind, he immediately identifies that concept of Christian with the Hindu community. But then it went deeper than that. In a forum discussion last May after the U2 incident took place, for you will remember that the U2 took off from an airfield in West Pakistan. And it turned to be a thing of discussion in the university among the students whether the United States had right to do it, to listen to those students as they discussed it, to listen to them as they weighed pro and con, the side of the position of Russia and the position of the United States. And then in the midst of that discussion, to suddenly become aware of something that had never dawned upon you. A young woman who had studied in the United States last year stood in her clarity of thinking. She went on to present how she felt the United States was wrong. And I realized as she turned to present her arguments that she was applying a standard of judgment to the United States that was different from the standard that she applied to Russia. And I asked her about it. I called her attention to it, and here was her answer. "Why, of course, the United States is Christian. Russia is not. We expect a different thing entirely from a Christian nation. I began to see more and more that in their mind, the group concept was real, that any Westerner was a Christian, that any American who entered that land, wherever he went, as an agriculturalist, as an economist, as a mechanical engineer, or whatever it might be, State Department representative, he was a Christian. Oh, you and I would challenge it. We'd turn to qualified. And I turned in their midst to qualified. I turned to qualified even as I would pointing out in their own country what was true. But as that awareness grew more and more, as students would walk into the mission office and hold before us papers, one would enter one day to ask the question, "Mr. Bennett, didn't you say you were from North Carolina?" And I said, "Yes." And I thought in those moments that I was in for a discussion about the America, for they like to discuss it. This is the land of dream. This is the place every one of them want to come, for here's opportunity. But then as he pulled out the morning's paper and looked at the headlines, his next question was, "Do you live anywhere near Greensboro, North Carolina?" For in that daily paper was the account of the sit-ins in Greensboro. To have another student come and ask if I lived anywhere near Burlington, North Carolina. And in that paper had been the incident of a Baptist preacher with his plans and what he was doing and the disrepute that he brought to the name of Jesus Christ. To realize that in their thinking, every Westerner was a Christian. Oh, this is not true of all. There are many who see it, but yet this was a concept that was there. And then I dared to stand and tell them what a Christian was, what it is to know Jesus Christ. I left Pakistan with that question still ringing in my mind, and I came back to the United States. We landed on the West Coast and we made our way across the United States. And last September, we came back to our home state of North Carolina. But ever since I got back, I've been asking more and more the question, what is a Christian? Asking it in context of Baptist churches. For more and more, there's the awareness in my mind that you are a world Christian, whether you want to be or not. That little church where you serve has world impact. That what you do as a theological student has impact that reaches beyond a classroom, beyond an examination, beyond a registrar's office. For you are answering a question to a whole world today of what it is to know Jesus Christ. I turned many times to read the Sermon on the Mount, to read those words that I felt came closest of what it meant to follow Jesus Christ when he said to deny yourself, take up your cross daily, lose your life to follow me. But then I could not escape a 25-year-old young man, a friend of ours, who's attended the mission in Dhaka every Sunday night for the last year. A young boy, a Muslim, economically solvent, who stands out in his community because he is economically solvent. A young boy who came with an inquiring mind wanting to know and who's inquired privately and I believe has experienced in his heart the presence of a living Lord. He's met Jesus Christ. And when he turns to read that New Testament, where Jesus said, take no thought for your life, what you shall eat, what you shall put on, it's real. For the moment he publicly acknowledges Jesus Christ, his family turns him out. The moment he takes his public stand, his business is over. And I dare to stand before him and tell him what a Christian is. I dare to challenge him that I know Jesus Christ. In a world that you're answering the question, what is a Christian? By what you're doing in your churches, what you're doing in your classes, I challenge you to find the answer. For when I came back to the States, there was one thing that struck me. A gross materialism that has permeated our churches, our life. And it's bigger and bigger and more and more. Without a sense of what it is inside to know Jesus Christ. You're answering the question day by day. And how you answer it has world impact. Whether you find it in your individual church, whether you find it in your life, day by day, will determine whether those mission fields stay open. For this is Christian America. May we pray? Our Father, so many times we presume to know. So many times we would be so outspoken. And yet we see people who have not. We see people whose lives are so simply planned, who do not ask much. They but ask to live. And God, then we see that which we've asked for. We see the materialistic desires of our lives. We see the motivations. We can but bow before thee to ask for forgiveness. To ask that as we go to our task of study, as we go to our task of serving thee day by day, that thou wilt truly give to us the Spirit of Jesus Christ. That thou wilt give to us an awareness of his presence. That thou wilt give to us a dedication that rises above material things, that rises above selfish ambitions, that would cause us to lose our life, that others might come to know thee. For it's in Jesus' name we do pray.